Hello and welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And we are here to bring you another week of LGBTQ plus news. And what a week it has been. It's been a heck of a week.
It's been a full 7 days.
It has been so many of the days.
What a week.
It's been 925,600 minutes. But divided by 52.
Actually, the
math on that one.
The number one complaint that I've heard about the Rent musical is that the movie, I should say, is they moved that song to the beginning of the movie because it's the most well-known song. But that song is supposed to open the second act because a year has passed between the first and second act. And
I see.
That's why they're singing about a year.
Oh, it makes a lot more sense now.
And then when people saw the movie, they're like, what did they do? This literally makes no sense.
So,
anyway, sorry, just an aside.
I wanted to start off with just telling you about some of the things that I've done recently. I put up my Christmas tree.
I've seen it. It is sparkly.
It is very sparkly. Yeah. I feel like no Christmas tree is complete without sparkles.
And you've got that, like, landing strip of LEDs.
Yeah.
Which, depending on the setting, is really pretty. Or, like, sci-fi. But not, like, sexy sci-fi. Like, back alley Blade Runner sci-fi.
Yeah. So, my partner Jake got the sort of LED strips that you put on, like, underneath shelving units and so on to like light them up,
or cars, or racing cars.
Yeah,
they use the same strips.
Oh, to help planes land.
Yeah,
it's all the same. Well, anyways, we got this. We haven't put them in anything yet, and the only time it's been used is for themed parties to light up a table.
It's true.
Or Christmas, where he wraps it around the Christmas tree.
Yeah,
and they're so bright.
Yeah,
that you can't see the tree or the decorations.
Yeah,
so I have to like turn it down to the miss settings to see it. But our Christmas tree is not very Christmassy. We're not that, you know, he's Buddhist and I'm nonchalant. And, you know, so
you're Welsh.
Yes. I think I'm Church of Wales by default.
Okay.
I think that's sort of our Christmas tree is like Glenda, the Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah.
It has a dragon,
a mixing stand,
a KitchenAid stand mixer, ornament. A bottle of wine, you know, and some really novel things.
Two cocktails.
Does your Christmas tree, do you have a Christmas tree and does it have anything novel?
Usually I decorate a cactus because I don't want to buy something that I either throw away or store for 11 and a half months. It's not my way. I find it wasteful. If I had an entire house, I would probably get a synthetic tree. Because I think the environmental impact of getting one synthetic tree and having it last 20 years is less than getting a new... Anyway, it doesn't matter. But growing up, I mean, if you want to talk about that, I was baptized Jesuit, First Communion Catholic, and then confirmed Church of England.
Oh, close enough.
But my mom did what is sometimes referred to as Victorian Christmas. So there was no images of Santa anywhere. Santa or Saint Nick. It's, you know, choose your pick. It's the same thing. No images of Jesus until and only on Christmas Day.
Oh.
And otherwise, it's all holly, ivy, silver and gold, red ribbons, and pictures of angels. That is... Oh. So we grew up with this very Victorian style of... And she would change everything. She would change the drapes. She would change the tablecloths. She would change the runners. She had spare rugs just for Christmas. And it was all like... really earthy tones. So it was like red and green, but it wasn't any like American mall primary red, primary green. It was like burgundy and forest green.
My mum isn't particularly Christian. Well, she isn't Christian. And so growing up, you know, we had the Christmas tree.
Technically, but... I'm three kinds.
You're a souffle of Christian.
I'm a French, Franco-Ontarian hodgepodge.
Bordeaux mix, maybe? I don't know. But so we grew up with like a Christmas tree and other sort of standard artifacts of being British. You know, there may be baubles and the odd Santa, but it wasn't particularly Christian. And one year they went to the States and just over the border, I think in Michigan somewhere, there's a town that prides itself on being Christmas Town.
Christmas Town, okay.
Yeah, and there's bajillions of just Christmas stores there all year round.
Okay, okay.
So they went, and there was a large outdoor nativity scene, sort of people-sized nativity scene. And my mother said to my sister, who at the time was about 17 or 18, go get a picture with Jesus.
A proper creche scene. The Jesus shouldn't be out until the 24th, 25th.
Well, she was like, okay, which one? And when everybody stopped laughing, they then explained that it is the baby.
The baby.
The baby is the Jesus. But yeah, no, that one, we've obviously not let her live it up since. But yeah, it's pretty funny that she didn't forget who Jesus. She was in Catholic school at the time.
Oh,
so,
man.
And had been for a while.
I mean, that first of all shows that Catholic school is not doing a good job of being Catholic. And yeah, secondly,
getting the basics. Decorating is a bit of a swing and a miss.
And
there's one mall in the Isle of Man in the UK.
Isle of Man being that weird, ambiguous island that is British, but not English and not UK.
Yeah, it's like its own little thing. It's between the UK and France. So they have a mall, nice, very fancy mall. There's some Ted Baker, Tommy Hilfiger, very, very fancy.
With the size of the island, it's probably the mall.
The mall.
Yeah.
And they decorate it. Now, at the mall near us, at Nordstrom, there's a giant tree and baubles that are 3 feet wide made out of lights that are, like, dangling from the roof. And, you know, malls put a bit of effort in, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, these guys were like, let's have a couple of polar bears, a couple of baby polar bears, and a couple of penguins, with one polar bear sort of looking about on all fours, another
penguins
polar bear.
Penguins are Antarctic.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
That's not the issue here.
We'll roll
and
on.
They'd have a second polar bear, like, stood up on its hind legs as if to see what's in the distance.
Right, yes.
Except the way they positioned them.
Yes.
Nobody noticed.
That they
clearly
were too close?
Yes.
Too close, got
yes.
it.
Yes, yeah. The one on all fours was in front.
Right.
And the one stood in his hind legs was immediately behind.
I don't think the mall should apologize. I think they should just be like,
We have dirty-minded customers.
Yeah, no, they should have just said, we'll change it, you know?
And then come out and just shift it to a 90-degree angle, like they're just annoyed at each other over dinner.
One is 30 degrees that way, the other's 30 degrees the other way. It's just enough. Because I can understand, you know, there's limited space. You have to pack them all in there, and they just didn't
think it through.
They had a choice to make as to where they were going to put a 1 foot gap between two of the statues, and they chose the wrong two.
So let us know if you've come across any ridiculous Christmas decoration faux pas, or
right.
have a family member who forgot who Jesus was, and we'd love to hear it at Talk Canqueer. You can find us Twitter, Facebook, and on the web, canqueer.news.
Let's move on to something serious.
Yeah, and it is
not serious like serious, but serious is like not what we're talking about right now.
Yeah, and it is a bit of a serious jump, a really big serious jump actually, because I want to talk about St. Michael's College School. So
is that its full name, St. Yeah. Michael's College School?
Yeah,
that's a okay.
It is an all-boys Roman Catholic school for grades 7 through to 12. It's a private school in Toronto.
Okay. Oh, I keep forgetting that we have private schools in Canada.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, not only do people forget that's a thing,
yeah.
but they also forget that they can have, and historically, on occasion, have had very toxic cultures. Now, for those who may not have heard, St. Michael's College School recently expelled 8 students.
I still can't believe that's the name.
6 of them have been arrested.
Arrested?
On allegations of...
As adults or as youths?
Well, it's youths. We can't really give too many details.
Because they're not available because of the law.
Well, there's publication bans.
Right. No, that's fair, yeah.
So, yeah, so we know that the police have arrested a number of them. I believe it is 6. There were 2 videos that were circulating. So there were 6 boys, all young teens. They've been charged with assault, gang sexual assault, and sexual assault with a weapon in regard to a locker room video. Now, just a bit of a trigger warning. We are going to be talking about this in the vaguest of terms. There was an incident in a locker room where an individual was sexually assaulted by a gang of youths with the use of a broomstick.
Mm-hmm.
We'll allow you to...
I'm sure most people are creative enough to know what happened.
Yeah. And there was another incident with another video that that also circulated where they were in the washroom and somebody's in their underwear. They got them wet from water off the, you know, sink, and then we're whipping them. They didn't seem harmed, but it's that sort of hazing culture that really came to the fore. You know, it's important to discuss the fact that sex assault of men and boys is something that happens.
It does, yeah.
And in hyper-masculine cultures, in spaces that are unchecked, you know, these things may be allowed to fester and occur.
Well, so currently I work with the police. I'm a contractor with the police. And I've spoken quite a bit with police about just crime in general. And this is something I've always suspected to be true. And I remember once I actually asked police about this, and they said that I was absolutely right. That it seems that the fundamental thing is a lot of people, and this is just a human thing, male, female, adult, young, doesn't matter the culture, doesn't mind the ethno-religion, people will sometimes do whatever they think they can get away with.
Mm-hmm.
And as power dynamics change, as cultural contexts change, what people can and cannot get away with will differ over time. So people ask, how did Bill Cosby do that to dozens of women? He did it because you could get away with it back then. Now you can't, and that's why he's in prison. What's happening here, we're not letting people get away with this anymore. And, you know, thank God for that. And it's these boys did what they did because they were on the under the impression that they could get away with it.
There was a culture of silence, a culture of, you know, these private schools are often isolated from the broader communities.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's these things, the culture can rot from within. And
I've met a lot of people who went to private schools, especially when I lived in Hong Kong. I met a lot of Brits who actually went to private schools. I even met three guys who went to Eton. And the number one thing that I noticed among them was more so, because people go on about toxic masculinity and things like that in private schools, but I found classism to be a huge thing because, you know, I went to a private school and the rest of you are commoners who didn't. Obviously, that's not universal. A couple of people that I met were really cool and really decent people. But that elitism makes you feel like you can get away with more. So, I mean, I think that's part of the issue. And this is definitely something that they're trying to fix. Because I've heard of England trying to deal with their private school problem. Because they have a problem with what happens in the private schools.
Well, it sounds like it's not just an English upper class issue.
It's especially, but not uniquely.
It is. This is an issue that has happened in Toronto. Yeah. This is a Canadian issue. There are Canadians who have been gang sexually assaulted by boys of their own class.
Like, yes.
This is a very serious issue that we need to ground here now.
Yeah.
Now, St. Michael's College School have committed to undergo a comprehensive review of student culture. Now, we know that hazing culture is something that can be sort of endemic across the student body, and it takes a lot to root that out.
Yeah.
They're engaging with a third party to approach it. The principal of the St. Michael's College School says that recent incidents at the school are offensive to everything we strive to teach the young men of St. Michael's. The victims of these horrendous acts are being supported and cared for.
So, I mean, the thing is, it's one of those things where hazing starts off from a very human place and just goes off the rails. So, rites of passage are normal, healthy aspects of human life. So, like, a healthy version of a rite of passage would be like a, what's the word that I'm looking for? A bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah. Okay, so when a rite of passage is done properly, it looks like a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah. When it's done improperly, it looks like weird hazing rituals with, like, razor blades and all the weird things you've read about in the papers. So, I mean, I think it's one of those things that could be done.
Just to clarify, there were no razor blades.
No. Assaults, not in this story.
No.
But I've heard other stories from other schools that are pretty bad. But I think there's a right way and a wrong way to do it. And I think that it's one of those things where you need to monitor that, you know, rites of passage, that rites of acceptance are done in a healthy way. And I think...
They are certainly a bit isolated.
Yeah, exactly.
Canada's only Catholic Basilian faith-based independent school. They teach men from ages grade 7 to 12, so young men.
Okay.
In a university preparatory, I can't say that word.
Preparatory?
That's the one.
There you go.
Style program, at least according to the statement they released about this. So 6 boys have been charged. Anyone in possession of the video in question that really was circulating on about this, we do need to note that if you are in possession of this video of the assault, that is considered to be child pornography by the police, and possession of it would be
by the law,
a crime. So we have not seen the video. We are not in possession of the video.
I wouldn't want to.
Absolutely.
For many reasons.
There is another video that has also gone out about the washing one. That one we have also not seen. Media outlets such as the Toronto Star has seen them and can verify that they exist. They're also not in possession of them. It's very serious. I mean, these are... It begs the question of if this is not only 2 videoed incidents that happened, and there's been another 2 videos that have also been handed to the police that led to... further suspensions. What else has been going on at that school?
Right. Well, here's the way that I see it. The story is very bad, but that there is a story is very good, because it means that the fact that this became a news story, that people care, that there's a reaction, and that people are going to be prosecuted in front of youth court, means that things are changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, this is just sort of generally good, because we are now prosecuting things we didn't used to prosecute. And it's one of those things where, like, everybody benefits. You know, this is, you know, assaults on trans youth, this benefits them. Assaults on women, this benefits them. The fact that we're taking things we didn't used to take seriously, it has broad implications. Like, I'm aghast, and I feel terrible for the young men who were assaulted, but the fact that this is news and that it's being taken seriously, I think that's good. That's good. Absolutely. That's positive.
And it's bringing the conversation around men who are victims of sexual assault to the fore. Now,
also that it can happen at all.
Yeah. To boys and to men. And yeah. So, you know, 1 in 6 men have been sexually assaulted, I think.
Yeah.
At some point in their lives.
At some point in their lives, yeah.
You know, the...
Military and college hazing also. I mean, military cleaned that up. I think it was in the 90s they did an overhaul to knock that down. But, I mean, it happened. Yeah.
The National Sexual Violence Resource Center, which is an American organization, reported that 40% of gay men and 47% of bi men reported some sort of sexual violence during their lives, which is... significantly higher than heterosexual men.
Yeah.
So this is something that does affect gay men. We do not know the identities or the sexual identities of anybody involved in this incident. Very grim conversation, and we'll be following the story as we're able to say more
in as much as we can.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this is something that comes up every so often where, I mean, I've had to explain this to straight colleagues quite a bit, that one of the reasons why some people don't come out is because they know that once they come out, their bodies become public property. And it's this really bizarre thing that happens that some people don't realize happens. So if you come out as gay, if you come out as bi, if you come out as trans, people feel more comfortable touching your body and asking you about your personal life. And I think... I don't necessarily think it's driven by homophobia or transphobia. I think some people view it as, well, since you've already told me what you're willing to do in the bedroom, which technically you have not at all, but I think the assumption is, since you've told me that much, you must be clearly comfortable with more. And that's absolutely not the case. Absolutely not. So, I mean, I think sometimes it is just homophobia or transphobia, but I think sometimes it's just people reading into, I'm using male pronouns when I'm talking about my ex, and we were talking about exes, everyone around the table told a story, I told a story, I'm just fitting in socially, I'm not giving you permission to touch my butt, which may or may not have happened to me in the past as a thing.
I wanted to move the conversation on now to really, I mean, it's much better news compared to sexual assault, but it's also not great news.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, the Ford government of the province of Ontario is causing a lot of waves.
Yes, they certainly are.
It is certainly something that that is happening with that particular government for sure. One of the things that they are doing is they scrapped the office of the child advocate. The office, the provincial advocate for children and youth, was scrapped as part of their efforts to bring down the budget deficit. Now, just a quick primer for folks. The former Liberal Wynn government said that there was $7 billion deficit projected for this year. The Ford government doesn't believe it. They said that's not true. They've run some initial audits and they reckon it's closer to $14 billion deficit,
which
is huge. So they're doing a whole bunch of initiatives to bring down the deficit. And one of those initiatives was to scrap three independent oversight bodies. The environmental advocate, the advocate for the Francophonie, and the children and youth advocate. They claim this work will now just be done by the ombuds. One of our listeners reached out to us and let us know that this is something that is rather serious. She identifies as a person of color who is a lesbian through CAS and all that jazz as well. So what we know is that the Office of the Child Advocate was a very strong supporter in navigating her relationship with the CAS.
Okay.
So really representing her rights and advocating on her behalf in that scenario. And that really is the job of the child advocate, is to support youth and children in relation to government agencies and government policies.
Right.
That's just been scrapped. It's been gone. Save a couple of dollar bills.
I've seen a lot about the Office of Francophonie gone because there are, I think there's 80,000 fewer Franco-Ontarians than there are Anglo-Quebecers, and the Office of Anglo Relations, I can't remember the official term, it would be in French for one, but anyway, Quebec has its own Office for Anglo Relations within Quebec, and they're running fine. You know, they don't have much of a budget, but they're doing their job just fine. I think it's one of those things where it's, I mean, the office, an office like that quite often is, you have your primary, the leader of the independent thing, you know, depending on what it is, their title may differ. They'll have an assistant and then they'll have like two administrative staff to answer the phones. And generally speaking, you know, maybe they'll contract an advocate or something like that. So there's usually like five or six people in these offices in total, which is absolutely nothing. And I'm willing to bet that half of them have been reassigned elsewhere in the government anyway. So if you're saving money by firing them and clawing back their wages, that's absolutely not going to happen because the union is going to just reassign them within the government. So I don't know.
So it's an independent office. So it's not.
Oh.
It's not really a branch of the government.
They're not government employees at all.
Well, I mean, the office gets funding from the provincial government and it moves on from there. They're moving in those objects and those investigations into the ombuds office. But
I think if it gets absorbed into some other branch, that's at least okay. Not ideal. And having a dedicated branch will get you way further.
Well, it's not just that. It is the Children and Youth Act really stipulated that children and youth in care or in receipt of child welfare services have a voice, a right to express their own views freely and safely and be informed in language suitable to their understanding of the existence and role of the Advocate's Office and how the office may be connected, contacted. And that office is really an expert in working with and working for youth.
Right.
You know, a child's rights first approach to engagement and all of that expertise is being split up into an ombuds office, which really their criteria is very different.
I think the greatest challenge, and I'm not saying this to be smart. A lot of people, they either don't know what an ombuds is, they don't know that the province has an ombuds, or they don't know what powers the ombuds office has. I barely do. and I work with multiple organizations that deal with them directly. I mean, there's a few things that I would have to look up. You know, I'm having a problem with this, that, or the other thing. Do I go to the Ombuds? Do I go somewhere else? I know the Ombuds exists. I know that they are more or less the complaints department for the government, but I also know that it's they do more than that, and in other ways they do less than that. There are certain things that you could complain about. You would think the Ombuds would deal with it. No, this other branch deals with that. And fair enough, you email the Ombuds, you say I have this problem, and they direct you to where you should be. They're not mean. I mean, it doesn't matter what you contact them with. They're going to direct you to where you should be. That's what most of the government branches do.
So we're going to...
I mean, it's not ideal because this is not what their job is.
Yeah, and the ones that are going to lose out on this is the youth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Youth who are going through care or receiving child welfare services.
And the environment and French Canadians.
Yeah, it's going to be...
Frequentarians, I should say.
You know, it's not great.
It's not great.
They've saved $500 million. Most of the money they have saved from various measures has actually gone back out again in terms of lost income through tax cuts that they've announced.
Okay.
You know, they've announced big tax cuts for those under 30,000, but they've also, there's also some tax cuts there for folks earning six-figure salaries. The last thing I want to mention about the Ontario Conservative Party, because I don't like the idea of our conversation being dominated by Doug Ford, but they had their party conference in Toronto recently.
Yes, they did.
And during their party conference, somebody put forward a motion that caused a considerable amount of stir.
Yeah.
It is policy resolution R4, and I'm reading it directly here. Education and community safety proposed by Tanya Granick Allen from Bruce Gray Owen Sound. She was actually removed as a candidate because of things she said regarding gay marriage.
Okay, excellent.
Be it resolved that an Ontario PC party recognizes gender identity theory for what it is. Namely, a highly controversial, unscientific, quote, liberal ideology, end quote, and as such that an Ontario PC government will remove the teaching and promotion of gender identity theory from Ontario schools and its curriculum. So essentially, in the same week that we saw Trans Day of Remembrance, where 300 trans folks worldwide have been killed just for being trans, you know, they want to say that being trans is not a thing. It's just a thing that liberals and...
It's a hobby.
Yeah, it's like a pastime. It's just it's a scare tactic. It's liberal invented so that men get told off for being in washroom. I don't know what their approach is. But it's gone down like a lead balloon.
Yeah, it got shot down from within. And this is something that... Like, it was the Harper government, I think it was 5 years ago, 6 years ago, there were grumblings within the Conservative Party at that time that they were going to try to rescind same-sex marriage. And there's a whole bunch of conservatives within the party who said, this is not a fight that we're going to fight. And things like this, when this sort of thing happens, I just have to remind myself that most of the Conservative parties in Canada, both at the federal level and all the different provinces, are like three or four Conservative parties that have been smushed together so that they can win. Because they would not be able to make it independently as the slightly right of center, the hard right, and the libertarian, which is usually what they are, smushed together. So it's probably hard right said this, and libertarian said, we're going to tell people what they can and can't do.
And I think we're already seeing that. I mean, this is coming from really social conservatives.
Yeah.
And within minutes of backlash to this, the PC Party of Ontario said, and I quote, to be clear, the resolutions passed from the floor were passed only as debate items for next year's convention. They were not passed as policy coming out of this convention. We are a party that encourages open discussion and debate, giving the grassroots of our party a voice. So really, it's like, no. We're not, that's not our thing. We're not going to yank it from schools until maybe next year.
Well,
you know.
Well, the thing is that when you open something up for debate, you give it a space to get shot down publicly, which I suspect from the reaction so far is what's going to end up happening, where it's like, you know, this resolution right here as it is phrased very badly. And no, No.
So we're going to jump to a song by Christopher Sorensen. This is a song called Afterglow.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is Afterglow, and we'll be back just after this.
About I on and on and
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
I'm Sebastian.
I want to take a moment to talk about Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, because, you know, who would have thought that that'd be something that would come up in this conversation? Right. But he is under pressure from the GOP in the United States.
Okay. So the Grand Old Party?
Yes, the
Republicans.
Republican Party of the United States. They have written a letter to President Trump, and I think about 40-odd of them signed on to it.
Oh, the GOP wrote to Trump?
Yes.
And to Trudeau? No. How does Trudeau come into this?
Well, you've just cut me off.
Okay.
Let me get to it. So about 40 congressmen signed on to the letter.
Right.
And what they are saying is that they want him to pull the LGBT plus protections in the new NAFTA, or the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, USMCA.
Okay.
It's the new NAFTA, essentially.
Right.
And I have the letter here, and in it they say, "Dear Mr. President, blah, 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 blah. We are, however, deeply concerned by the unprecedented inclusion in the USMCA of sexual orientation and gender identity language. For the first time in a free trade agreement, the language is housed in 23.9. Last autumn, the Department of Justice issued a very helpful a very helpful memorandum regarding the transgender employment discrimination claims. So ever since Trump has been in office, trans rights, trans worker rights has been massively eroding in the states.
Yeah.
They have been. They've the Justice Department has essentially said that there isn't really a protection there under sex, and you can discriminate against, you know, fire and so on, just on the grounds that they are trans.
Okay.
So, yeah, and of course it's just this crazy theory that liberals made up, but you can fire them for it.
And housing?
Yeah, just across the board.
Okay, okay.
But the Trudeau government has made this as one of their sort of key platform elements. It's a part of their approach to negotiating.
Right.
He told the Toronto Star that we got to a good agreement that represents Canadian values, a Canadian approach. And Politico, which has also been reporting on this, said that the LGBT provisions were a Canadian priority and they were part of the progressive trade agenda that Trudeau has been taking in his sort of approaches to trade. So for Canada, making sure that LGBT folks can't just be fired willy-nilly left, right, and center in line with Canadian values would mean that folks in the automotive industry in Mexico or in the US would also not be able to be fired just for being gay.
Because we already have these laws. Yeah.
We do.
Yeah. Now the Mexico actually has the most to gain from this. So Mexico has the highest recorded amount of transphobia and homophobic attacks in the world. Bearing in mind, not every country is progressive enough to even bother recording this. So saying Mexico is the second worst in the world, they're not. They're the second, they have the second highest rates of countries that are progressive enough to even record it. So they're probably like the 30th best out of the, 137 countries are we up to now or something like that?
There's a lot of them.
So they're probably in the top third in the grand scheme of things, but you have to be a certain degree of progressive to even bother recording this data in the first place.
Well, the United States also has a heck of a track record, and incidents of hate crimes and firings and so on of LGBT folks has skyrocketed.
Yeah.
Not only under the Trump administration, but also just before, in the run-up with all of the rhetoric.
And it sounds petty, but the fact that they're even bothering to record it is good news, because it means somebody somewhere cares enough to write it down. And it's not ideal by any means, but agreements like this built into NAFTA could actually lead to progress elsewhere.
Well, I mean, both Canada and the US are sort of giving and taking here. The Americans really wanted Bell to be able to put in Canadian ads into the NFL, because then the value of NFL games go up quite considerably.
Bell, like the phone company.
Yeah. Like, and the TV channels and all that jazz.
Why do they care? That's such a bizarre thing to care about.
And this is where I'm getting to. So the CRTC said for the Super Bowl, you can't take out the ads because they're a part of the entertainment experience of the Super Bowl. Bell can't sell ads if they're not allowed to take the American ones out.
Right.
So the NFL pressured the US, and the US put it in the bill, in the trade agreement, that Bell can sell Canadian ads.
Okay.
Which is weird, but it means that the value of it for the NFL in the States is much higher. They make a lot more money.
Okay.
And it's a win. And the only ones that lose really are Canadians who wanted to see the American ads.
What I don't, I, this just leads to the idea of not available in your country. I don't understand.
It really, and that this is what, like, I'm getting
let
to.
Let me give you my money. Like, is, I don't understand.
You know, so the U.S. Congress has no issue with forcing our regulator to impact our experiences of content coming over.
Yeah.
But LGBT protections, which already partly exist through Obama-era protections... you know, the Republicans have made it their mission to remove all protections for the LGBT community. And by having the Canadian push to include it,
some Republicans
is actually, by putting it in, well, by 40 of them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you get people like Schwarzenegger who are still out there who are like, I mean...
But he's not a congressman.
Right? He's not a congressman, yeah, I know.
But you get efforts by Trudeau to have a progressive approach to trade.
Yeah.
These things get included... Other things get let go on the Canadian side as a give and take. You know, yeah. Okay, fine, sell your ads, but don't fire trans people.
Yeah.
You know, Trudeau has been asked how much is he willing to defend LGBT right protections in the deal.
Right, yeah.
Now, bearing in mind it has been agreed, so it hasn't come into force yet.
Right, yeah.
So there's still a potential that this particular protection might get pulled if Trudeau doesn't stand up to pressure from US Republicans. So I never thought we'd be in a position where gay rights in the States depends on the will of the Prime Minister of Canada.
It's weird from the perspective of a Canadian, but it's not like there's no historical precedent for this.
I mean... This is one, this, the North American Free Trade Agreement 2.0, or USMCA, is interesting in that there are a lot of provisions in there which normally are not in trade agreements.
Yes.
So a lot of people were talking about the fact that Mexico and the US would be able to veto, or not veto, but they would be able to leave the USMCA if Canada negotiated with China a free trade agreement.
Okay.
So it really curtailed Canada's sovereignty to engage with free trade agreements with other countries.
Okay.
That's normally not, those things are almost never in trade agreements. So having LGBT protections in there,
yeah,
that's not normally in there.
Yeah.
Having, you know, the right to SimSub advertising in a Super Bowl game. That's not normally in, you know, that level of detail is not normally in there.
There's so, one thing that I've heard of so far that was a Trump proposal that I was like, oh, he did a good for once. And I don't think it's because Trump is a good man or anything. I think it's because Trump has a long history of being a bad businessman. I think this is really where this comes from. He proposed a sunset clause and he said it's not appropriate for this generation to lock future generations into our decisions, and that this should be renegotiated every 10 to 15 years. And it's because he's a bad businessman and because he's locked other people into bad contracts, and he's been locked into bad contracts, and he knows how to build an escape hatch. But I don't think he's wrong. I think he's generally a crass buffoon who's not ideal, but I think he did a good for once, because he has a history of being a bad businessman. I don't know if the sunset clause is going to be in there. Apparently a lot of people are against it. But I think that's one of the few good things that has come out of this, which is not normally in free trade agreements. That's how I brought that up.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The whole thing, I really hope that this does go through, because we're not saying you need to integrate intersectional theory into government. What we're saying is, afford your employees basic human dignity, please.
Yeah, and which in, you know, in the U.S. is broadly already in place.
Yeah,
but the Republicans want to pull that apart.
It's really weird. Yeah.
So there's a lot of things I want to talk about. Another occasion when somebody was said that they can't talk about something, And that is the Salvation Army. Now, so the Salvation Army was maybe going to do an apology, maybe not. They asked one of the writers of the LGBTQ Nation to write the apology.
Okay.
So they passed it up the chain. He did. They passed it up the chain. And we've never heard anything since. But apparently there's been leaked internal memos to staffers working for the Salvation Army to not under any circumstances mention anything gay or Trump related.
Okay.
As they try and garner more donations this year.
Right, okay.
Because they're just trying to pretend the whole anti-gay history never happened.
I'm not against them not talking about Trump, because I'd be fine if nobody ever talked about Trump, because I think he became president because people wouldn't stop talking about him, or at least partly because of that. But the gay thing, yeah, I mean, you don't want your volunteers to be talking about your official policies. Ideally, you're going to want your media relations department to do that.
But that's not what happens. You know, when you've got people jingling the bell in the mall,
yeah.
Gay people are like, don't donate to them. They support anti-gay initiatives.
Yes.
And then a conversation comes around, and typically volunteers will be like, oh, no, we support anyone in need. Except for in 2004 in New York, where they threatened to shut all of their soup kitchens if the city passed LGBT protections. Or that other time where they lobbied the Bush administration to limit $24 billion in grants to not include cities where there were worker protections for LGBT rights. Or that other time in New Zealand where they tried to decriminalize homosexuality and the Salvation Army actually went around and collected signatures. Or that other time in the United... You know, there's a whole list of things where they were very actively involved in fighting against LGBT rights.
First time I heard about this was in 2000 and I'm going to say 2007. And it was my mom who told me. And my mom, she's no fool, but she's not politically engaged. So when she called me up and she was like, do you know about the Salvation Army? Do you know what they do? Do you know what they refuse to do? You should never donate to them in the mall. And then she actually, it was really weird because I don't know what she had read that day, but she was on the ball. She listed for me like 7 other organizations who take money this time of year that would be better off. Actually, any money that you would give to the Salvation Army, I encourage you to give to your local food kitchen in the form of cash, because cash goes further than canned goods do, by the way, because they can source directly from farmers and stuff and actually get nutritious food in bulk with your cash. So donate to your local food kitchen, because that's going to go to a poor family. That's what I have to say about that.
Not well, anyone in who is food insecure.
Well, yeah, yeah.
You know, people trying to do good and raise money to do good, you know, I have a lot of respect for that.
Yeah.
But to simply pretend that they haven't actively and with the full force of their influence try and prevent LGBT people from being able to be not fired for just being gay,
yeah,
or threatened to withhold food from those who are starving,
yeah,
because of it's barbaric, these measures that they attempted to pull.
I mean, bringing up the fact that they, other than this and a few other things they've done, the Salvation Army can do good. There's other organizations that do better.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to donate money, and chances are, if you're listening to the show, I suspect you don't exactly have thousands and thousands of dollars to throw around. If you're going to be donating money for a cause, just find someone who does better. That's basically what it comes down to. There's so many other organizations that do better.
Yep. Now, it's you know, every year for the last decade now, they've been fighting against this, you know.
The reputation? Just,
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the optics. They're not actually fixing the thing. They're fighting the optics.
Absolutely. In February of 2018, the Salvation Army in Australia was calling for a broad freedom to discrimination law.
What?
So in a submission to the Australian Government Inquiry, the Salvation Army advocated for legal exemptions from anti-discrimination laws for people and businesses who hold or express or act on beliefs about marriage, sexuality, gender, and family. Essentially, they wanted the freedom to be able to discriminate against LGBT folks and for anybody else that claimed this belief to be the law in Australia. You know, and it's... That was in February. you know,
of this year.
Yeah. And this is not, this is, they just haven't given up. They're not just handing out soup to the poor, you know what I mean?
They're
behind the facade of the Jingly Bell is a politically astute organization that uses its wide reach and resources for a political end. And I feel like I am comfortable stating that, given that their long history of you know,
political interference.
Well, what a kerfuffle. But anyways, we'll be seeing loads of them around in malls and things now. So
I suspect over the next couple months and over the next few years at this time of year, there will always be a new story about the ways in which the Salvation Army could do better.
So I think it's important now that people are less willing to accept things.
Yes.
And I say that in terms of people are less willing to accept misogyny.
Yeah.
People are less willing to accept incidents of sexual assault and rape culture and hypermasculinity, like we mentioned earlier this morning. People are less willing to accept people just being fired for falling in love with somebody of the same sex or gender.
Yeah.
You know, people are less willing to allow things to slide just because of the optics or the good business.
Yeah.
You know, and the last thing I wanted to talk about is Tanzania again.
Okay.
Now, we've been keeping up our pressure on the Canadian government on this, but what's really interesting is that Denmark has said that respect for human rights is of paramount importance to Denmark. And Denmark is not accepting countries that just pretend. Okay. So they've actually pulled $10 million worth of aid from Tanzania as a result of its anti-gay crackdown.
Oh.
So yeah, their actions has resulted in real dollar figure impact in Tanzania.
Good on the Dutch.
We'll see if Canada's going to do anything similar or anything at all, really, to that degree. Hmm. We don't know yet. The last other one, then, is Gilead Sciences, the ones who make Truvada and other HIV prevention drugs.
Yeah.
There is a lawsuit alleging that they have been withholding drugs for HIV prevention that have been proven to be safer than the ones currently on the market.
Why would they hold those back?
So it's a U.S. federal court lawsuit.
I know usually when you're talking about conspiracy, and conspiracy usually has a tinfoil hat feeling to it, but conspiracies sometimes are true. But there are, you know, usually when you're talking about a pharmacy company and you're talking about withholding drugs, the big conspiracy is that treatment is cheaper or more profitable than cure. So I'm willing to bet that these drugs don't cure it.
This drug has less side effects, less adverse side effects, except Truvada and TDF haven't, the patent on them hasn't expired.
Okay.
So when the patent on the drug expires, other companies are then able to create generic versions.
Oh, they're just milking it.
That's the allegation.
Sitting on the other one.
Sitting on this nice, new, safe, less side effects drug.
You can undercut the competition when the generics come out. So the minute that
their patent on their drug comes out, they can release this fantastic new drug that they have
a
full patent on.
Really clever in a dastardly way.
It is outrageous is what it is, because then all those folks living with HIV are taking a drug that the company who makes the drugs knows is not as good as other drugs they have, but they're just sitting on it. I think it's ridiculous. Now, these lawsuits have not been proven in the court of law, but the fact that it's even suspected is unacceptable in today's day and age. You know, this dastardly behavior, as you said, we're not going to just lie down and take it.
It's kind of twirling mustache level of
it is very twirly, like, mustache level.
Like Marvel movie villain, where you're like, clever, but, you know, you're a butt, because that's not cool behavior there, bro. But, I mean, yeah, no, it's not ideal. It's not ideal. They could easily, this is the crazy thing. They could easily just come up with a song and dance about, you know, extended human trials, trying to double check, which they're supposed to do anyway, make sure that there are no hidden side effects or no interactions with other drugs. And
maybe what they're doing, maybe they're just being called out for having it, but not having released it for so long.
Yeah.
Now, we have pretty much run out of time.
What?
I know.
We just started.
We are going to be talking more next week. We're playing out with Ria May's new track, Hold Me. Ria May is a fantastic Canadian artist.
Mm.
This one's featuring Frank Cadillac. I have been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian. And thank you for listening. I've been thinking about the first time I was just a kid with dope eyes, and I don't even think I realized there was anyone else like me. I remember in the first grade we thought that everyone would graduate, that I could untwist this fate that God had planned for me. It's such a nuisance, I just lose it like that. I don't wanna live like this, I wear them like bruises. Every bad love I had, I can't let go of it. Till you hold me, hold me. I'm not a guy, but I'm ready to crash. I make the most, but I know it won't last. My mind is at war, but it always comes back when you hold. I've been blinded by the headlines. Wanna move, but I'm paralyzed. Heaven help us, I'm helpless. I'm just trying to keep my head up high. I remember in the 10th grade, we used to hit snooze and lie, and we weren't even trying. These days the sirens, they cut through the silence. Can we turn down the violence? It's such a nuisance, I just lose it like that. I don't wanna live like this, I wear them like bruises. Every bad love I had, I can't let go of it. Do you hold me? Hold me. I'm not a god, but I'm ready to crash. I make the most, but I know it won't last. My mind is at war, but it always comes back when you hold. I just lose it like that. I don't wanna live like this. I wear them like bruises. Every bad love I had, I can't let go of it. Do you hold?